I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
Passion, music, and storytelling come to life on stage. Join us for Torn Apart Together, a dynamic musical theater showcase featuring talented students from Henry Ford College and the University of Michigan, Dearborn. Directed by Vanessa L. Zane Lai, this unforgettable performance takes center stage at the Adre Auditorium in the Fine Arts Building at the Henry Ford College. Catch the show Saturday, February 15th at 7 p.m. or Sunday, February 16th at 3 p.m. Tickets are just $10 general admission and $5 with an HFC or U of M Dearborn ID. Get your tickets now at hfcc.edu/campus-life/theater. Presented by the HFC Theater Department and Henry Ford College Fine and Performing Arts. Don't miss it.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn featuring local and independent artists. It is time for the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw, take it away.
Happy Valentine's Day. Good afternoon and welcome to this February the 14th edition, this love edition of the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw with you right here on the station that I love, and I hope you do too, 89.3 FM, or maybe you're listening on the web today at whfr.fm. Either way, so glad you're here to celebrate Valentine's Day with us. We've got lots of special things going on, not only today, but throughout the weekend, actually, here on WHFR, so do stay with us. We are excited at this time to kick off sort of the formal version of a new series that we will celebrate and delve into for the next few months, and it is all the brainchild of our counseling department here at Henry Ford College, and in particular, Deb Gates, who is going to be joining us in just a moment, and this is called the Counselor Connection Series, Renew, Recharge, Reflect. Those are important words. We are. It seems as if we're, you know, headed into the middle of the year already, but really it's only February. So we still have, you know, the pre-spring and summer cusp to sort of reinvent ourselves, and through renewing, recharging, and reflecting, well, we think we've got some tools to help you do that. This is dedicated and committed to our students, but also information that will benefit everyone. So do keep listening, and we'll see what your take is on all of this exciting stuff. So at this point, let's welcome Deb to our broadcast. Deb Gates has joined us in the past. She is a licensed professional counselor here at Henry Ford College and just an all-around super gal. Deb, happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Susan. I'm really glad to be here today and share information. And I'm glad that you mentioned it, reinvent yourself, because we can be in June and you can still reinvent yourself. It's not January 1st and, oh, I have to do it only on one day. It's something that's continued during the year. So I think that's really important that you brought it out.
Well, thank you. As we are kicking off again, this, as I said, the sort of formal series, it's because we've had our counselors on so many times in the past, and we love everything that that you not only stand for, but are able to really impact positively the lives of our students and our community here at Henry Ford College. Coming up next month, we're going to talk about grounding and test anxiety. We got a lot of that. With Amy Ducklow. And then in April, it's positive thinking and self-care with our Gwen Pringle. But let us jump into February. The topic is setting boundaries, but we also recognize that in order to sort of prepare ourselves for the information that you're going to share, Deb, maybe we ought to sort of get in the mode, get in the mindset. And you are always, so good with different techniques and things. So we want to encourage our listeners to safely participate in this, meaning if you're driving or something, be mindful. But how can we sort of kick off the topic of setting boundaries, but also you'll prep us with maybe some breathing techniques or something?
Yes, that sounds good.
Perfect.
We live in a challenging world. We need to manage our mental and physical health. And we need to talk about it. And I believe that's really one of the issues that we have. We have struggles, but we're not talking about it. So we really need to talk about it. And during this series, hopefully this will help other students really engage with other people about, this is what I heard, what do you think? And I think that is really important. If any parents are out there too, think of what's going on in your life with your kids. And are the boundaries appropriate for their age group, as well as, you know, some of the concerns that you have for the kids? And it's a very important question. What are we doing for our own self-care and our own stress management? And we do have to reflect on it every day. We need to schedule time, even if it's for 10 minutes. We need time to restore our energy and just to pause. Our day is very busy, but just to pause, even if you don't know what to do, just pause and reflect and recharge in what you're doing. You know, before we start talking about boundaries, and you had mentioned it too, we counselors are really into breathing, because if you know how to breathe and work with your breathing, that will eliminate a lot of our stress, or we can work with our stress a little bit more. And it also centers ourselves so that when we breathe, we become centered, we can really see what's going on and make better decisions instead of being, oh my God, what do I do now? But you can be more relaxed and centered and really understand some decisions that you have to make. Proper breathing is the most effective technique to reduce stress. It sets the stone, it sets the tone and opens our minds. This way, we breathe affects the tension in our muscles and influences our thoughts and feelings. One of the body's automatic reactions to stress is rapid, shallow breathing. Breathing slowly and deeply is one way that you can turn off your stress reaction and turn on your relaxation response. Before we start box breathing, which is one of our counselors' favorite, let's just start with a couple deep breaths. You breathe in through your nose and out with your exhale through your mouth. Let's do it again. Breathe in through your nose and exhale through your mouth. So hopefully you feel a little bit more centered and relaxed. So we're going to talk about boundaries. Setting boundaries is very important to mental health. Think of boundaries as your own personal rules of engagement. When we draw these lines and are clear about our wants and needs, we protect our mental and our physical health, both of them. Personal boundaries are the limits and rules we set for ourselves within relationships. Boundaries are not about controlling people. They are about taking action to protect your own personal and mental health. If you know your boundaries, it's important because you can react in a more positive way. Boundaries should be based on your values or things that are important to you, you know, regarding family. Your boundaries are personal. They are yours. Know your boundaries before entering any situation. This will make it less likely you'll do something you are not comfortable with. With your boundaries in place, your confidence and self-esteem will also increase. You will have a greater sense of personal control, and you will feel both physically and emotionally safe. If you don't set any boundaries, you will likely become stressed and burnt out. We don't want that. And as resentment simmers, relationships might become strained. Have you ever attended a meeting at work, school, or place of worship, and it's the same people who volunteer? Is that you? Think of setting boundaries equates to self-love. There are six different types of boundaries. We won't go into them in depth, but the physical boundaries refer to personal space and personal touch, emotional feelings, intellectual thoughts and ideas, sexual, how and with whom you express your sexuality. Material boundaries refer to money and possessions, time boundaries on how you spend your time, and our students really have more issues with both physical and emotional boundaries. And those tend to be the ones that we really work more with students. And it's a big issue. With boundaries, let's look at some exercise. So we've talked about why it's important. Well, what kind of exercises can we use? What words should we use? You always have the right to say no. When doing so, express yourself clearly and without ambiguity so there is no doubt on what you want. Something like the SMART goals. Be specific, make sure it's relevant, you can measure it, very similar to that. So what do you say when you're looking at boundaries? Some verbiage you can use. I can't do that for you. Please don't do that. This does not work for me. Not at this time. Strong words, but it's clearly what you want. Some other things when we look at our boundaries, if you're going to try to buy yourself some time, instead of saying, sure, I can join you, or I can do that when you're really unsure, say instead, I need more time to consider this, but I will get back to you tomorrow. It really shows definite time. You're not just saying eventually, but the other person will appreciate, I'll know it's going to be tomorrow. When you want to say no with a little bit more explanation, instead of saying yes or oh sure, say, I really appreciate the invitation, but I'm not interested right now. When you feel disrespected, instead of saying, when you don't return my phone call, I feel hurt, say instead, I would like to talk about this with you later, but now it's not the right time. So be very specific, and we all want to be respected. So just remember that when you do set boundaries, too. What are some help?
You know, Deb, I was just going to jump in there for a second. What you're talking about is all just, you know, in this discussion, it feels very logical. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, of course I'm going to say that. Well, of course, why wouldn't I just share my feelings and be honest with my thoughts? Yet when you sort of unpack these on a deeper level, I think, particularly for students, but anybody, frankly, I'm thinking about my own, some of my own life experiences and thinking, it's just hard to say no to that person, mm-hmm. or they get me every time, or I feel like I'm letting somebody down, or they intimidate me, or I want to be a pleaser, and mm-hmm. there are like a million reasons why this is so much harder than just, you know, somebody listening right now. Well, sure, that's easy to say, mm-hmm. yet it's not, and you must see a lot of that in, you know, your work with students, I would think. And so to sort of describe when you're starting to share this information with students and others, you know, how, at what level sort of do they kind of start to digest the reality of how challenging this whole thing can be?
When they actually say what their boundary issue is, a lot of it regarding time. So we work with schedules, we look at a calendar. And what do you have to do every day? You've got to put that in. You have to go to class. You have to sleep. You have to eat. Some real basics. So then you look at the whole week and where can you put other things in? And it's very hard. I find it very hard to say no. And yes, I tend to be a people pleaser, people who can't say no. But sometimes what I tell students is pause before you say, oh yeah, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Because if you pause, and it doesn't have to be for 20 minutes, just pause and think, when I look at my schedule during the week, do I really have free time to do it? And that's when we have to start saying, this sounds good, but you know, there are four other people in our department that could do the same thing. And even though you even professionally, I believe in our counseling profession. I was, you know, several presidents, and I did a lot of things with our national organization, state and local. And I believe in what I do, and I'm passionate in what I do. But again, we all, just like students, we need to look at our schedule. And can we really do it? And sometimes I really want to do it, but I can't do it this week. There's just too much on my plate. again, all of us have a lot of things on our plate. So we do have to compromise a little bit. But again, you know, it's a give and take. If everyone is really busy, either we decide this is not important for us to do, or can anyone take some time to do it? And when you really look at a lot of things, you don't, it's not using a lot of time, but it's just the negativity of, oh no, I've got to do this. And but if you really break it up into small parts and the realistic expectation, it's not that hard to do it. So it'll take you 5 minutes. But sometimes when you look at the whole schedule, and there are more commitments. I remember when I started this profession 51 years ago, things were different. Students who came into our office, it was 10 minutes of what the issue was. And the next 20 minutes, we just talked about life. Now it's 40 minutes of issues and really no extra time. I am so sorry.
No, no, take your time. Just make a note. Would you like a water?
I think I'm good.
You sure?
Maybe I better take one,
yeah.
Just in case.
Yep, yep.
No, I usually have so much water during the day, and I didn't have my water. Because I didn't want to stop and say, oh, I have to go to the bathroom.
You know? I hear you.
Gee, you have to do a lot of work on this one. I feel badly.
Oh, no.
Thanks.
Sure.
Oh, and cold, too.
Good. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to let that run. It's easier for me when I remember the conversation to
yep.
And know when to fix it and so on.
Okay.
May I? I'll jump.
Okay.
And I like how in your explanation you said to buy some time, because sometimes it is that first instinct to just right jump in and say yes, or even no, mostly yes, but just having that those tools to be able to buy some time. And I'm also thinking about something that you said, people feeling like I want to do it, but I only have so much free time, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we'll get to the concept of maybe I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to say no, you know. So that's sometimes that's me, right?
Yes.
But it's a thing.
And that's something that we all have to realize within our own skin. It's okay to say no, and that's one thing you have to practice, saying no. We all have to go to a speech therapist, because we don't say the word no. And we really have to. And even if we don't like something, you know, we're so into thinking about other people, which is important. But then we have to look at realization on you. And what is important for me? And is there some things that I can just eliminate or maybe do at a different time? So those are things you have to really look at. And again, pause. And think. And when you pause, you won't say something that you regret. And if you pause, you're realistic. You don't want to say, I never want to see you ever again. Well, that's usually not the case. And you can reframe it as, right now, I really don't, what you did to me, I really don't want to see you again. However, let's talk about this tomorrow. So at least, you know, people who just won't commit or won't communicate. And that's when communication is important, because if you can communicate, just like we have some students who have some issues that they don't go to class and they don't do homework. And because they have commitments at home with their families, and that's when we work on some communication. Can we find people, neighbors that will help out? Are there family members that can help out? The old-fashioned carpool days. So those are things we try to communicate with, you know, to try to get their lives better. I've had some students that were on dismissal, and it's because they had to take care of their siblings. and we all have commitments, but somehow to communicate, I'm failing. What can we do to make this work?
So there certainly are extremes of how this can impact one's life, both in terms of social experience, educationally, going to classes, being able to manage classes, and certainly professionally as well. Mm-hmm. This is such good information. As a reminder, we're talking to Deb Gates. She is a licensed professional counselor here at Henry Ford College, and this is our first of the Counselor Connection series, Renew, Recharge, Reflect. Next month, we're going to be talking about test anxiety and grounding. And then in April, it's positive thinking and self-care, all right here at WHFR, your campus and community radio station. You talked a little bit about getting us prepared when the ask comes in, mm-hmm. Deb. How can we use our sort of our physicality to help reinforce what it is that we're feeling, and then finally being brave enough to say, mm-hmm. what can we do visually to help help our cause in the situation?
Use confident body language. That's important. Face the other person. Make eye contact. And it doesn't make a difference with boundaries or life. Eye contact is so important. And use a steady tone of voice. Not too quiet and you can't hear. And don't speak so loudly that you offend someone. Be respectful. I think that's really the most important, because you don't want someone to yell at you. You don't want anyone to put you down or give the silent treatment. I think that's the worst. Sometimes it's like, grow up, even when you're 80 years old, then it's okay. It's okay to be firm, but your message will be better received if you are respectful. Plan ahead. Think about what you want to say and how you will say it before entering a difficult discussion. Remember to pause. I've said that several times in the last few minutes. Mm-hmm. Pause. This will help you be more confident in your position and really say what you want to say. And you don't want to regret what you say or having to eat the words later. So it prevents you. So plan ahead. Compromise, I've spoken about that before. When appropriate, listen, consider the needs of the other person. You never have to compromise, but remember in relationships, there's give and take. So those are some things that will help your body language, your thoughts, to make the boundary issues more important when you communicate these issues to you.
Well, thank you for that. Sometimes it's not a person that's messing with our time. It's certain habits that we've mm-hmm. created. Certainly one, of course, technology. We can't avoid it, or we can. We just sort of subconsciously choose not to, I think. And I have so many students that will do exercises about, okay, putting the phone away for a while, and track how long you could go without looking at it. It's crazy.
Five seconds.
Yeah.
If you're lucky.
And then mm-hmm. the last time you lost your phone, how did it make you feel, you mm-hmm. know, when you misplaced it? That panic mode kind of. So it's not always, you know, people, I suppose, trying to interfere with your time, but it is this weird relationship we have with technology that in many cases I think is very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. But is that something that would sort of fit into this concept of setting boundaries?
Yes. You have to look at technology. And the key is, does the technology interfere with your life or sleep? So those are things you have to look at. Are you checking national headlines every 2 minutes? And is that getting you stressed? Maybe check it only a few times a day. When a lot of the European tennis tournaments and golf tournaments are playing, are you going to wake up at 4 in the morning to watch the match? Or can you just DVR it? And you can watch it when you wake up the next morning. And doing that, you know who won, and it's less stressful. You don't have to go through the 3 hours on, oh no, who's going to win now? Your quality of sleep is important to wellness. So you have to look at that when you make decisions. You know, the fact of the Super Bowl. How many people stayed up until 1 o'clock in the morning or even after that? And you could have DVR'd it or done things differently or taken a nap earlier so that you were able to continue work life or your school life the next day.
Yeah. that makes perfect sense. I remember the phrase FOMO, right? Fear of missing out.
Right.
That's such a thing with what you're talking about.
Yes. And we all, even with little kids, I tell my grandkids, oh, you're really FOMO. And they want, you know, if we knew back then that we would tell them to go to sleep, now I wish someone could say, oh, you can sleep the next 6 hours, and you can't do it, you know? And but yeah, FOMO is a big thing.
No doubt, that's wild. When we talk about the concept of saying yes or no, it is typically to something that we've invited into our lives, or purposefully or not, is a part of our lives. Again, whether it's a friend relationship, a situation with a coworker, a boss, a parent, family member, or technology, or something else that gets in our way, that concept of ultimately, no one can make us do anything but ourselves.
Correct.
Right? I keep thinking that in my head. I was it Eleanor Roosevelt, I think, who said, no one can make you feel a certain way except you.
Mm-hmm.
And this just speaks volumes to that.
Yes.
To me.
And you can say no. And as I mentioned earlier, we all need to see a speech therapist to know how to say no. And this is my favorite, because I need to say no more often, and most people here at Henry Ford need to say that. But before volunteering to do extra work, pause, before agreeing to do anything. We all need balance in our life. Know and honor your limits, and say no.
Yeah,
and we all should practice it, and practice it even in the car. It's something you can keep on practicing. So when you do want to say no, you can say no without as many issues.
Yeah, because there certainly are issues related to that for so many people. It's like, can't do it.
Yes.
And then I think what gets me, I have a sister. I'm going to make sure that she listens to the archive of this once it goes on our website. She'll say yes and do everything for everybody, and then I can see the resentment building up in her.
Yes.
I can see the reaction, the unhealthy response that is taking place to not only her body, but her mind, right, her heart. And I often say to her, well, that's kind of not fair, because you said yes to this person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll bet if you'd have said no, because I'm swamped this week or whatever, they'd have said, oh, okay. Well, thank you for being honest. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And then your relationship would be better.
Yes.
But, oh, that drives me crazy. It's like you feel like if you say no, you're going to harm the other person or something, but then you end up taking it out on them anyway because you're angry subconsciously at them for asking in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying? It's a vicious cycle.
The other thing, too, and something to think about, is just don't ask certain people to do things.
Mm.
If there's going to be an issue, and I've learned that in several of the organizations that I've been president of, membership chair, and you name it, that there are some people it's just better not to ask, because they'll say yes and they won't do it. And then again, it's stressful for me because of the fact I know it's not going to get done. And if I would know earlier, I could have put it into my schedule to get it done. So I'm more careful when I ask someone to do something, because they may not do it, or they'll complain about do it. And for my stress management, I'd rather do it so then I don't have to deal with all of that negativity, especially around holidays.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, oh yes, I'm going to do this, and then they don't, and it's like, okay, let's start breathing, that box breathing, let's try it again, you know?
Right. I like that. I like that you brought that up, Deb, because here I'm thinking this whole time we're talking to people that have trouble saying no and have trouble setting the boundaries and so on. Well, think about if you're the one on the other end of that. Maybe you're the one that asks everybody to do everything, and sometimes it's like, you know, take a moment, step back, and look at what you're asking of someone else,
mm-hmm.
and get a clue once in a while, you know what
yes.
I mean? So yeah, I like that we're talking to both sides, sort of both sides of that scenario.
Oh yes.
Because this is like a therapy session. My sister again come in, like, why did she ask you again when that last thing was such a challenge and so on? Mm-hmm. She's like, well, she needed the help. And I'm thinking, if I could only have 5 minutes with that person that keeps asking you to do things, come on, open your eyes a little bit. Can't you see? Can't you ask somebody else once in a while? So I'm
yes.
glad that we're talking to those people as well as those of us that, you know, maybe need some procrastination, or not procrastination, that's not
no.
that need the ability to say no. And, you know, this is Valentine's Day, right? So
mm-hmm.
we maybe think about the role you play in other people's lives and how you can help positively impact those lives. And maybe it's asking other people a little less, or maybe not asking the same person every time.
Right.
That's so smart.
And we see that in any type of professional activity, church-related, even instructors, sometimes to pause. And I believe 90% of people want to do things, but it's their interpretation when, what do I do now? And then there's resentment and the whole thing on communication. And it's hard to communicate because we don't want to know what the other person's response is. And it's easier not to communicate. And if we spend more time in communication and just breathing in and out, using our box breathing, breathing in, hold for four, out for four, getting yourself in a centered position and then ask the question so you're not as hyper asking the question, but just communicating more. This is how I feel. And really taking our feelings, you know, as important feelings, because we do matter. And sometimes we feel when we're always doing everything that we don't matter. And that's why we have to bring in that communication. How can this be resolved? How can we all work together to make this work? And like you said, with relationships are reciprocal and mutual. It takes two, you know, to make things work. And sometimes it's very easy in communication with, you know, relationships, and others you have to really work hard. And that's how it is with life. Life is challenging, and pausing, thinking, and really communicating your thoughts to other people. You know, everyone hopefully has a special friend that you can just say, I don't know what to do with, da, 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 da. And having someone, either a special friend or a third-party person, to say, why are you really upset about this? Just do this. And sometimes we make mountain out of molehills, and you think, oh, no, the world's going to end. And sometimes just communicating something to a person, and then it's like, yeah, no problem. So again, communicating what your thoughts are, you know, is important. And remember, you can only control you. You can only control your thoughts, your actions, your ideas. Focus on what you can control. We have anxiety when we're going outside of our control, because I can't control you, Susan. You cannot control me. So anxiety will decrease if we only look at what we can control. And our life will be easier when we only control what we can control. And sometimes look at what's tangible thing right now that you can work on. Maybe it's processing your feelings with someone or taking action to support yourself. But only look at what you control. And we have posters in our office of things that you can control. And if you really look at that, it really brings to reality that, you know, I can't control what my child's doing. I can't control what my student is doing. But I know my ideas, my communication technique with the student, and that's all you can control. Mm-hmm.
And remember to pause and remember to breathe, because that will make it a lot easier in looking not to confront, but to manage things in the classroom or in life. I remember talking to a philosophy instructor several years back, one from here at HFC, and again on this Valentine's Day edition of the WHFR Journal, he talked about in those three words, I love you, that the word I is the most important of the three. Mm-hmm. Not the love and not the you, but the I, because that's taking the ownership of what's
yes.
coming next. That speaks just so perfectly to what we've been talking about, Deb,
yes.
and what you're talking about and all these techniques and things. So that's fantastic. I know there's also a technique like a, I don't call it a safe word, but like a empowering word.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I've heard that kind of a thing can be
yeah.
very helpful.
Choose a word that will bring intention and clarity into your life. And it's not too late. It's February. You can start a new word. A word that serves as a simple reminder of your goals. At my drumming class, my instructor asked all of us what word would bring us into 2025. Some words included purpose, compassion, peace, resilience, calm, passion, faith, and connect. Keep the word on a sticky note on your computer or on your mirror, and as a daily reminder, what do you want this day to be? Susan, what word would you choose?
No,
I'm
goodness.
Putting you on a spot.
Yeah, no, that's okay. This is not just because of this weekend's Super Bowl or our wonderful Detroit Lions, who almost next year. Probably the word grit,
mm-hmm.
because I see, you know, what that mindset did and can do for so many others. And I did an acronym for this word a while ago. So you, yes, this is on the spot, but at the same time, I've done this before in my mind. And when I think of the word grit, I think of get rid of icky thoughts.
That's
G-R-I-T.
A good one.
And so grit, not only for the face value of, you know, come on, you can, you know, you got this, you can do this, but also getting rid of icky thoughts, because sometimes when I hear things in the news and I see things and I'm just feeling like, oh, no, this is not good, the world and what's happening, I think to myself, no, you can choose to own this and ingest it and take it and it's going to mess you up, or
mm-hmm.
you can choose to just, you'll process it and then let it go. So mine's grit.
And that's important, positive thinking. How do we reframe things to make it more positive?
Mm-hmm.
My word is passion. And I actually had the word on my mirror that I look at every morning. And I look at passion of things that I love to do, things that have purpose in my life, and what makes me go, and what makes me Deb Gates. And I believe in passion. I love what I do. And it serves as a motivation reminder every morning. And, you know, sometimes I'm doing a motivational workshop next Tuesday, and sometimes you just don't feel like it. But, you know, you have to really look at your motivation and why do you want to start the day? You have a whole day in your life, or hopefully the whole day, to really make a difference to everyone. And how are you going to make it different for the people that you see today? And that's why I'm into the passion of, you do have to have passion to really look at things positively, like your grit, getting rid of those icky thoughts. You know, yeah, we're going to have snow, but we may not have snow. So really look at, okay, if we have snow, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
If we don't, that'd be great. But, you know, looking, reframing, pausing, those are things that are really important.
These are great techniques, Deb, and our time is just about up, but I am so excited to sort of formally have us starting this official session, Counselor Connection Series, Renew, Recharge, and Reflect. And again, we are going to have more of these coming up each second Friday of the month for the next 2 months at least. The counseling department here at HFC is just tremendous. So many opportunities for students and others to connect and get support as needed. closing thoughts as we wrap up? Anything you want to share about what you're all doing over there? By the way, I have to say, on this Valentine's Day, Deb is wearing a beautiful sweater with all sorts of hearts all over it. So you are not only talking the talk, but visually, you know, sort of celebrating all of the important things that you've got going on.
Thank you. Just wanted to remind you, the counseling department focuses on career exploration and wellness. It's better if you can make an appointment with us, because then we are expecting you and we can think before you come in of some techniques for you. Amy Ducklow does Mindful Mondays from 12 to 1, and she does things like the breathing, affirmation, things like that. I do Tools for Success on Tuesdays. So I do career exploration, motivation, personality, coping with death and loss. So those are a few things that I do. Just check the website. All of our things are listed on the website. So we'd like you to join us. You don't have to pre-register. Just show up from 12 to 1 on Mondays or Tuesdays. And hopefully we can be of assistance to you. And thank you, Susan, for letting us spend time with you. We really enjoy this. And we enjoy getting out to our students, too.
It is our pleasure, absolutely. HFCC.edu, and just search counseling, and you'll find everything you need. It's just as simple as that. Well, again, Deb, thank you for your time today. Happy Valentine's Day. I said happy Galentine's Day earlier. I kind of like that one as well, but it's all good. The season of love, so let's share it and own it, not only for each other, but for ourselves as well.
Yes,
right?
And thank you, Susan. Very well said. I appreciate it.
All the best. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal right here on 89.3 on your FM dial. Do stay with us.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
In our final segment today on this, the WHFR Journal Valentine's Day edition, we're going to focus on our love for the library. And yes, we love our library, our HFC Eshelman Library, and our wonderful librarians, Tessa and Janelle, and the entire crew. Well, we love them every day, not just Valentine's Day. But this is a podcast called Happily Ever After, and it's from a series called Brooklyn Public Library Borrowed. And it's a podcast talking about loving love at the library. So for Valentine's Day, devoted a full episode to romance novels, kind of fun talking about romance novels and kind of what's between the covers of those novels. And also a chat with writer Nicole Perkins about how the genre is diversifying. So I think you'll find it fascinating. We hope you do enjoy. Please stay safe, be well, and we look forward to you being a part of this WHFR Journal each and every Friday. And by the way, one more quick plug for the wonderful musical showcase coming up tomorrow, Saturday, February 15th at 7 o'clock, then Sunday, February 16th, right here on our campus at Henry Ford College, the Mackenzie Fine Arts Center, the F building, the very back at the Edry Auditorium. We are going to be celebrating the theme of love, again, Torn Apart Together, exploring the theme of love. It's a musical showcase. I think you will absolutely love that showcase. Last week, we talked to director Vanessa L. Zine Lay, as well as the head of our theater department, John Michael Safel. Should be fantastic. The multifaceted topic of love, well, it can take on many forms, as you know. Come explore them with us in a beautiful showcase that, again, is tomorrow and Sunday. For more details, check out our HFC website at hfcc.edu. And now we bring you romance from the library interpretation. fiction, and we're going to talk about romance novels just a little bit as we wrap up this Valentine's Day edition of the WHFR Journal. We love our loyal listeners, and we thank you for bringing WHFR wherever you go. Keep listening, and thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
I'm Adra Duse, writer and co-host, and I'd like to introduce one of our new producers and co-hosts, Allie Post, librarian at Mill Basin Library. Hi, Allie.
Hey, Adra. It's good to be here.
And it's Valentine's Day. So on Borrowed, we are devoting our whole episode to romance novels.
I'm excited to get into the romance genre.
Me too. So let's dive right in. This is Borrowed, stories that start at the library.
So if you were looking for romance at Central Library, there is a whole designated section within language and literature. It's a whole wall of books dedicated to romance alone and has a little sticker on the spine just in case they were misshelved or you got lost.
Recently, producer Virginia and I went on a tour of the Central Library's romance section with Jennifer Profit, BPL's digital marketing manager and a romance enthusiast. As a librarian, I see a lot of romance covers getting returned and checked out. And I wanted to ask Jen about them and how they changed. She knows a lot about the history of cover design, and we got to ask her about some of the more risque covers, which was pretty interesting and fun.
This is historical romance, and this is a fairly typical cover that we have here. So, you know, it's what we call a clinch cover. It is, you know, a couple in an embrace on the cover, usually with some level of disrobing. I do see a not clinch cover down here, which is one of those Scottish that I was talking about. So coming out of the water, he is not even wearing a kilt and barebacked.
He's not wearing anything.
He's that is heavily implied. that letter is doing a lot of work to make this okay for shelves.
So Jen's not only an enthusiast, she also used to work in romance publishing before coming to BPL.
And maybe we should pause here to define what we're talking about when we say romance novel.
Yeah, so to be considered a romance, the story has to have a happy ending, and the love story has to be the main focus of the book. Here's how Jen put it.
Books that follow a relationship as it develops throughout the plot, and that's the plot is all moving towards having that final goal of the couple get together. If we're looking at love stories, those might still have those same attributes to the storyline, but doesn't necessarily mean that the couple gets together at the end, which is a must in a romance of the genre.
Jen's love of romance goes all the way back to when she was a teenager working at her local library.
You know, as a 16-year-old, I would sneak books home, or because I was supposed to be shelving them, I would just come to the desk with like a bigger pile than I had put away. And then it wasn't until I went to my local bookstore, I think, and I was looking in their fiction section and I couldn't find the authors I was looking for. And then I finally got up the gumption as like a 16-year-old to talk to a clerk. And she pointed me to the romance section. And that was the first time I was like, oh, this is what I'm reading. I'm reading romance. That's what I'm looking for. So this is another clinch cover. This is Cat Sebastian. So it's two men here dressed in historical garb and, you know, have, and this is also an interracial couple here on this cover. So it's like two for one. You wouldn't have seen this on a romance cover 20 years ago, certainly. You know, a lot of times with queer romances in the past, it would practically look like literary fiction. You know, it'd be the outside of a house or, you know, a bar stool tipped over. So to actually see this traditional clinch cover for a romance between two women is really, you know, kind of shows how much the genre has changed.
So just to take a step back here, I think it's important to note that the romance genre is really popular at BPL. Staff at the library estimated that about 5 to 10% of adult print circulation at BPL is romance. And that's not even taking into account reading on ebooks and audiobooks, which is harder for us to track. And nationally, according to publicly available stats from 2018, the romance genre brings in about $1.3 billion to the publishing industry every year in the United States. One out of every four books sold is romance, and half of all mass market paperbacks are romance. Those numbers don't even include the massive self-publishing romance industry.
Safe to say that romance readers are not going anywhere and they're forced to be reckoned with. We talked to Stephanie Anderson, the Assistant Director of Selection at BookOps, which is the shared technical services organization for NYPL and BPL. Basically, she manages the team of librarians that select and order everything you can borrow from the library.
The thing that publishing, and I think libraries too, get wrong about romance readers is they think romance readers only read romance, when in fact, most romance readers are just some of the best readers you'll ever meet in your life. They're just avid readers. They just love reading. They read everything, and they buy books for everybody in their lives.
And Stephanie said that, anecdotally at least, at the library, we have seen romance readership grow in the last couple of years.
During the pandemic, a lot of people signed up for library cards for the first time to use our digital collections. And I think a lot of people then wanted to read what was cool, and what's been on Book Talk and all these other places that people learn about books has been a lot of romance. And, you know, they're not, if you're stressed, if you're under a lot of pressure, which all of us have been for the last 3 years, like, nothing feels better than a romance novel.
Yeah, that's basically how I was introduced to romance novels, was during the pandemic. I was actually listening to podcasts that were recommending romance novels. So here we are. It's full circle.
That makes sense. So I started working at BPL this year, and I was so struck by the amount of romance that our patrons were reading and requesting. Personally, I had not really read romance before, and I felt like I needed to catch up so that I could better advise our patrons. And I also noticed that romance readers don't usually just take out one book. We have some readers who come in and they will like regularly check out more than 10 books at a time. And so I was just super impressed by how much these readers were reading and how quickly.
Perhaps one of the reasons that romance is growing in popularity is that there are just more kinds of romance stories out there now. The genre is really diversifying, and in order to explore that aspect, we talked to writer, podcast host, and romance enthusiast Nicole Perkins. She shared a great story about how she discovered the genre. She chanced upon her first Harlequin after discovering a stash of them among her great-grandmother's possessions. Nicole's great-grandmother was a domestic worker in early 20th century Tennessee who could not read. And so, as an avid young reader herself, Nicole's curiosity was piqued.
Like, why does she have these books in her cabinet if she couldn't read? And one of the books was this romance novel called The Flame and the Flower by Kathleen Woodiwiss. Changed my life. Just completely changed my life.
The Flame and the Flower is a historical romance that was published in 1972. The novel is about a young Englishwoman who was quote-unquote kidnapped and ravished by an American sea captain and plantation owner. And here, ravished is code for rape, which in the book leads to a love marriage and lots of other social intrigue. The book was wildly popular in the 70s and 80s, and it's one of the first modern bodice rippers. And it left a lasting impact on Nicole.
It is very problematic. Looking at it now, there was a point in my life where I reread it every year. I think I've owned maybe 10 copies of it throughout my life at this point. I still go back to revisit it just to make sure that it's as terrible as adult me knows it to be. But also, little 8-year-old me is like, this is fantastic.
Books like The Flame and the Flower are examples of the lack of diversity of the genre at the time. As an African-American woman growing up, Nicole came to expect an absence of racial diversity and saw it on the covers of the books. So she came up with a creative way around that.
I would do this thing where I would avoid, if the book cover had a blonde and blue-eyed person on it, or even just blonde, I would skip it. But if they were dark haired, I would pick it up and I would just pretend that the people were black. They were just like very fair skinned. because one of the things that I notice is if there is an absence of race mentioned, then that they're white. It's only when they have to identify the difference of whiteness, right, that you get someone is black or someone is Asian or whatever. So that's what I would have to do when I was younger to trick myself.
Because historical romance sometimes left much to be desired in terms of non-problematic depictions of race, class, gender, and sexuality, Nicole turned to romance subgenres in order to find different stories.
And that's when I found paranormal romances with the vampires and the werewolves and shapeshifters and people who were like time traveling and stuff like that. I mean, they were still human beings, you know, whatever. And there was still a lot of race issues in there. But it was kind of like, I can't find what I'm looking for, so I'm just going to pretend that some immortal out there wants me. I don't know.
In her own writing, Nicole aspires to make space within the canon for subversion, connecting with audiences by turning readers' assumptions about race and class on their head, and moving beyond cover impressions to real-life practicalities.
I want people to understand that everybody can fall in love. It doesn't matter. Like, anybody can fall in love. Everybody. You can be poor. I recently asked a question on Twitter, like, have you ever read a romance novel where the characters were poor or lower class and stayed that way? Because a lot of times we have these kind of Cinderella stories where they start off, you know, lower class, and then they meet a duke, or they meet, you know, this mafia millionaire. So I've been thinking a lot about what does it say about who's allowed to fall in love.
Nicole did share that she's working on her first romance novel and is looking forward to adding to the canon of Black love romances that have been coming out in the last few years.
Something that's also important to me is showing the diversity of Black womanhood and showing that we come not only in many different shapes and sizes and shades, but also different life experiences. And so I want to reflect that in my work.
I can't wait till it comes out and we can read it.
We're all eagerly awaiting the publication, Nicole. To end this episode, we thought we'd round things out with stories of how readers started their love affair with the romance genre and why they continue to read romance.
In addition to talking with Stephanie Anderson and Nicole Perkins, we attended a virtual romance book club meeting organized by Jennifer Proffitt and a bunch of her friends, so you'll hear some of their voices too. Thanks so much to Jess, Jen W., Heather, and Jen Proffitt for letting us sit in on their book club.
One of my earliest reading romance memories is my mom sitting at our kitchen table while we were doing homework, and I remember her reading the Outlander series and describing the plot to me in depth. And then it wasn't until I was older and I read the Outlander series myself that I realized that my mom was reading potentially scandalous material at the kitchen table.
My first experience with romance was definitely just walking down the aisles of the library by happenstance, picking it up and snuck it in between my school reading books that I had to get.
I remember what really sealed the deal about romance novels was I did a book report in my fifth grade class, and later my teacher pulled me to the side and she was like, I think next time you need to pick something that's a little bit more age appropriate. And of course, me being a very stubborn child, I was like, oh, this is something I'm not supposed to do. This is something I'm not supposed to enjoy. Say no more. This is going to be my identity for the rest of my life.
I think working in publishing, we all have developed even further appreciation for romance, specifically from a financial perspective, because it pretty much keeps the rest of the industry afloat. So people can mock romance all they want, but it's what allows every other author to have their book deal. I would never be embarrassed to read romance. And I think it gets a bad rap because it's often women going after what they want. It's no more or less formulaic than any mystery or sci-fi novel.
I think romance novels, even though they end in a happily ever after, no matter what, they allow a safe place for people to process very complex feelings. There are so many romance novels that deal with grief and pain in ways that you cannot feel safe to do that in other books.
I think if you've never read a book with a guaranteed happy ending, it can be easy to underestimate the sort of emotional power. That's one of the things I love about it. Like, to me, a romance novel is not unlike a formal poem, like a sonnet that has very strict rules. And the joy is partially in the hands of a really talented writer. It's what can they do within this well-trodden set of rules that nobody's ever done before. If you haven't tried it yet, try at least one. Do yourself a favor and just try it.
Borrowed is brought to you by Brooklyn Public Library. This episode was written by me, Adjua Aduse, and Virginia Marshall, and hosted by me and Adjua. Virginia Marshall produced the episode with help from Fitzy Bodenheimer, Robin Lester Kenton, and Jennifer Proffitt. Our music composer is Billy Libby. Meryl Friedman designed our logo. And you can catch more of Nicole Perkins on her podcast, This Is Good For You. Special thanks to Jennifer Proffitt and her book club for inviting us to listen in. You can follow Jen and Heather as they discuss romance in books, TV, and movies by subscribing to their podcast called Ship Tease.
Happy Valentine's Day to all of our listeners. Don't be shy. Go pick up a romance novel, and we'll be back in your ears soon.
When what you're listening to gets to be a bit too much, it's good to go back to where it all began, the radio. Tune in to WHFR.FM for relaxing live shows, hosts you can connect with, and alternative variety music that you won't be able to get enough of. That's WHFR.FM at 89.3. WHFR Dearborn. We're making waves, so dial in and catch them.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Passion, music, and storytelling come to life on stage. Join us for Torn Apart Together, a dynamic musical theater showcase featuring talented students from Henry Ford College and the University of Michigan, Dearborn. Directed by Vanessa L. Zane Lai, this unforgettable performance takes center stage at the Adrey Auditorium in the Fine Arts Building at the Henry Ford College. Catch the show Saturday, February 15th at 7 p.m. or Sunday, February 16th at 3 p.m. Tickets are just $10 general admission and $5 with an HFC or U of M Dearborn ID. Get your tickets now at hfcc.edu/campus-life/theater. Presented by the HFC Theater Department and Henry Ford College Fine and Performing Arts. Don't miss it.